Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for March 17th, 2024, and happy St. Patrick's Day. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on social media at Greg M. Parks. And this is where we talk to big shows in pro wrestling. And so obviously we've got some big shows coming up, WrestleMania right around the corner, a lot of big indie shows taking place that weekend. We just had AEW's pay-per-view a couple weeks ago. And so we're going to touch on WWE, we're going to touch on AEW here, and we're going to do that with my co-host for this week, longtime PWTorch.com contributor Tony Donofrio. I know, Tony, it was touch and go as to whether you'd be able to join us. I know you've been battling an illness all week, so happy to have you with us.
I am very happy to be here. If I sound hoarse, I feel a lot better than I sound. I went to Orlando last week, had a great time with the wife, came back, got pneumonia. That was the worst part of it. I'm thrilled to be here. We're gonna talk about a lot of fun stuff this week. So that happened this week. So I'm excited.
Absolutely. And if you want to be a part of the show, you can call us up. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. If you want to email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We take emails as well as phone calls. We've got one email waiting for us right now, but certainly there's room for others. I just saw Azan emailed us in as well. So got a couple emails now to get to. But I want to talk the big news of the week for both WWE and AEW before we get to phone calls and emails, Tony. And the debut of Mercedes Moné in AEW, I think, was the big news of the week for AEW. She finally made her AEW debut at Big Business, the special Dynamite episode on Wednesday. And she's been out of the national spotlight for a little while. You know, she was in New Japan for a little bit, Stardom and whatnot. What did you think of her debut, debuting her in the right spot, her hometown of Boston, got that hometown pop, and then later on came in at the end of the show to help Willow Nightingale. But what did you think of the debut? Was it befitting of the hype? Although, you know, the hype was a little bit different because it's kind of like CM Punk, where it was a wink and a nod by AEW. They didn't outright say Mercedes Moné was coming, but anyone who's paying attention expected that. So what did you think of her debut on Wednesday?
So, I mean, the debut itself, you know, everything that happened to open up Dynamite Wednesday, I think they did a great job with it. I love the presentation. She definitely got a hero's welcome in what you is considered her hometown, but I mean, she also has a home base in Los Angeles as well. I thought, if you put the beginning of Monday's Dynamite in a vacuum, I thought it was a great debut. You mentioned the wink and the nod promotion. That's where I would have definitely changed course. I mean, Mercedes Moné is a big deal. She's been out of the national spotlight basically for 2 years, like you said. And when I say national, I mean like North American, WWE, AEW. And I think I would have promoted her. I know they still sold 99,000 plus, something like that. But I would have still found a way to promote her. I mean, if you look at what the TV numbers were, they were not in a tank, but I think they could have done another 100,000-150,000, and maybe their demo could have been up a little more. But, and it's just something like she is a huge star. The wink and the nod worked really well with the CM Punk stuff because it was so blatantly obvious, but if that's not a secret sauce for everyone. And then I know we'll probably talk about it more later, but I think they should have leaned a little bit harder into showing that she was going to at least be making an appearance later in the show during the main event, because that could have helped retain some of their audience as well. But like I said, in a vacuum, that first 15 minutes or so, I thought they did a great job with her debut.
So I guess the next question is about the AEW women's division. It's a division that's gotten a lot of criticism from the time that AEW started. You haven't heard as much criticism of it these days, but certainly the AEW women's division is limiting, I think, in certain ways. There are only a certain amount of TV time to go around for the women, unfortunately. Do you see this changing Tony Khan or Warner Brothers or whoever's calling the shots on how much or how little to feature the women, does the acquisition of Mercedes Moné and the way that she was treated as such a huge star in her debut, does that change the calculus a little bit, do you think, for how the women are going to be portrayed in AEW? Or is this something that may be just specific to Mercedes?
I really hope so. I mean, if you look at the women's roster for AEW, it's a solid roster. There's enough women, especially, you know, you brought in Mercedes, you're going to get Britt Baker back. I would imagine, I almost kind of thought she might have shown up Wednesday to interrupt, but I think that could be put off until maybe after Dynasty. You're going to get Jamie Hayter back. And then you have some solid women like Serena Deeb, up-and-comers like Julia Hart and Sky Blue. And, you know, and I mentioned there's a few names like Thunder Rosa. I'm not even mentioning all of them. And Athena's buried behind a paywall. They have some good talent. There's 5 hours of television that they have every week. I mean, their TV rights deal is up this year. I would like to see if they get, I'm assuming we all assume that they're going to get renewed. There's no reason if they're going to be putting on 4 to 5 hours of, you know, television, especially with the two main shows, you could even potentially split the rosters. I know a lot of people, that would be a kind of polarizing statement, but there's enough women talent on that show that there's no reason to not be able to feature the women more prominently. Between the men and the women, there's enough room for two shows. The addition of a couple weeks ago of Jen Pepperman, who was basically brought in to help creative and has a good relationship with Sasha, or old habit, Mercedes Moné. You know, there's no reason for AEW not to give this women's division a little bit more respect and give it some more time. And like I said, there's enough talent between the two men and, you know, the men's and women's rosters that to not give it more time and more effort, it's a disservice to some of the talent. And I think, you know, if he was just waiting for the right time to pull the trigger, which, you know, he's had a couple times where he's brought talent in and he could have done it. This has to be the time. If no other time before, then definitely now.
Well, with the addition of Mercedes, what do you think of the state of AEW's women's division right now? They've added some talent with Deonna Purrazzo. They should be getting Britt Baker back, should be getting Jamie Hayter back. That will add some depth. Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander have their little story going on. Same with, Ruby Soho and Soraya. So they're, you know, Julia Hart has improved. Sky Blue has improved. So there are positive signs, I think, about the development of the women's division and specific characters within the women's division. But what do you think of the state of the AEW women's division right now?
So I think the best way to say it for me right now would be it has loads of potential, and they just need to give it the time and care that it needs. And really, that's all. That's the first big step. There's a lot of promise in that division. And it's one of those things, even when you look back on when WWE finally decided to move away from all the goofy diva stuff and actually take the women seriously, you know, there was a movement back then for that. And it could be done much in the same way that it's like, you know what, you don't have to mention it on TV. You don't have to call it special like Sasha even, or again, Mercedes even tried to do it on Wednesday. It doesn't have to have a name, the movement itself. Just do it. Like I said, and I don't know if that's answering your question, but there's so much potential with that division, especially with some of the talent they've got and signed in the last year. And again, I forgot Purrazzo, and she's been prominent on the television the last 6 weeks. So there's so much that they can work with there. So I am encouraged because of that potential. And I just hope that they take advantage of what they have right in their lap right now, because if, you know, there's a segment of the audience out there that really does get into women's wrestling and respects women's wrestling. And we've seen it happen in WWE. There's no reason to believe it couldn't happen in AEW. You just got to condition your audience, and there's no reason that can't happen.
Yeah. So the end segment with Mercedes Moné coming out, what did you think about how that played out? Is that something that Willow Nightingale, first New Japan Strong Women's Champion, defeated Mercedes Moné? to win that title back less than a year ago, May 2023, and Mercedes getting involved right away with that. Is that something that you think they can play off of for Mercedes Moné's first story in AEW?
I think it's fine. I think, Toni Storm is doing her own thing right now with the Women's World title. You can make the argument that that character doesn't need that title, but I think there's a story already in play with Toni Storm and Mariah May that I think that's going to be the big crescendo at the end of that story. Believe it, even though Deonna Purrazzo is in the sights of Toni Storm right now. But back to your question, I mean, it's a fine program to start her off with. I think that, and I'm encouraged by the last 2 weeks of their television. They've been doing more video packages and giving you more explanation, and they're not using the old, as Jason Powell at ProWrestling.net likes to say, oh, go look it up on Google or YouTube. They've done a better job, mm-hmm. and if they can explain, and they did a little bit of that Wednesday night, if they can explain why there's a link between these two and tell that story, it's a good, logical way to bring Mercedes in. And it can be done, and if in a 2 months' time, it might be a quick title change, but I'm not opposed to a quick title change if it makes sense, and we're not just making a title change for title change sake, where maybe at Dynasty we see Willow Nightingale takes that TBS title, and then 2-3 months down the line, Sasha finally, whether they want to turn her heel or keep her babyface, like I said, that's something to be discussed 90 days from now, but that could be something that we see. Sasha earns Willow's trust, and in a couple months that turns into a big feud, and by way of that, you've elevated that title, and that's nothing against Julia Hart. Mm-hmm. Julia Hart's, 22 years old? She's got a long career ahead of her, and I believe she deserved that moment a couple months ago when she won that title, but the title's just kind of languid. It's just kind of been there for a few months, and I know Julia was away, and she may have had an injury, so if this is the story they want to go with and they want to elevate that title, especially if you're trying to make that title seem important again, and I had mentioned before the prospects of doing a roster split, and you need two strong women's titles to do that, and that's something they want to aim for going towards the latter half of this year into 2025, I think it could work.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here, along with PWTorch.com contributor Tony Donofrio, talking about the big shows in pro wrestling here on Wrestling Night in America. Let's go to the phones for our first call of the evening. The 814 area code, Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us tonight?
First question is on Moose in EC3 recently having title defenses in my area. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go. Who do you think is the biggest draw between those two? I heard they both did pretty good business from their respected shows they were on.
That's an interesting question because Moose is currently TNA champion. He has a long history in TNA as being a top player. Granted, it's on a smaller scale, but EC3 has that experience in WWE in addition to have been in TNA for a pretty substantial amount of time. I would have to guess Moose maybe, but I do think if you're weighing those two, Tony, and you're asking the question, who is the bigger draw, I think a lot of it could have to do with advertising. If you are advertising Moose for your organization as the TNA champion and you just have former WWE superstar EC3, I think Moose could draw a little more if people know that he is a champion of a pretty well-known brand, the number three promotion, I guess you could say, in the United States. So, Tony, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a bit of a loaded question. I tend to agree with you on the one end where on a billboard or like a marketing board, like you said, if you put up former WWE star EC3, he's had more eyeballs on him just by the fact that he was on NXT and in WWE. I think Moose is I hate to say bigger star because I can't say that based on what I just said, but part
I
of
know
me Moose,
it's tough,
but yeah, like part of me with Moose, I wish he would have taken a chance outside of TNA instead of signing that new contract last year, because I think he could have got some real interest, whether it have been in Japan or AEW or WWE, and I would have liked to have seen him do something different in a different company, because I think he deserves that opportunity. I think he's good enough to be in one of those other companies and kind of move up. I wouldn't have wanted to see him like fall back into an MLW or NWA, anything like that. But I would have loved to see him take a chance on himself to see if he can get to either, you know, the two bigger American companies or even in New Japan. So if gun to my head, I would say EC3 just because of what we said. But, man, I thought there was the chance for Moose to really kind of break free from TNA for a while and at least take a chance. And I'd have liked to see what he could have done because he's done everything in TNA kind of twice over at this point. But yeah. To answer the question, I guess I still got to go with EC3 just based on the fact that he's been around and has had more eyeballs, easy for me to say, on him over the last 5, 6, 7 years.
I did forget about EC3's NXT run, and that may carry mm-hmm. some weight, although that's, a generation removed from current day NXT, so I'm not sure how much weight that truly carries. Ryan, we'll go to you for your second question for us.
Second question is based on the AEW show last night. Are they trying to build to a Nigel McGuinness, Daniel Bryan match for the Wembley show this summer based on Nigel saying that Daniel's missing a chromosome, and he just kept going on commentary pretty much all night bashing Daniel Bryan?
Yeah, he does that every time he calls a Bryan Danielson match. Mm-hmm. So nothing new there. But I think it's a fair question. It's one I think about every time Nigel calls a Bryan Danielson match. It's part of me is like, this has got to be meaning something. Like, and I can even picture in my head, I was doing it as I watched the match last night, I was kind of picturing, okay, how does this go? Bryan Danielson comes out and, he talks about how Wembley's going to be his last stadium match, and then he turns around and points at Nigel McGuinness and picks him to face or something like that. So I have thought about it. I don't think it's going to happen if I had to bet money on it. I don't think it's going to happen, but boy, what a build that would be. I mean, there's a lot of interest in that match dating back to their ROH days, but just the way that Nigel has gone after Danielson on commentary, and really Danielson hasn't responded to that. So it's just kind of boiling and boiling. And yeah, I think that could be, if Nigel was to come back and if he was to get cleared for a match, boy, that would be the one to do it for. Tony, what do you think of the odds of that happening, though?
So you mentioned Wembley, and part of me believed that, and there was no knowledge of this. I didn't know no source of this, but it was just like how I felt. I thought that match might have had a chance to happen this past year, but Danielson got hurt. And at the time, there was pictures floating around of Nigel McGuinness, and he got himself into amazing shape last summer. And you can't imagine that was for nothing. And then it fell through. So, this is like the Danielson and Miz stuff from Talking Smack, that it was like, it went on for months, and you're like, and at the time, Danielson wasn't cleared when he was going by Daniel Bryan. And you had to think like, it has to be leading somewhere, but Danielson can't wrestle. And eventually, luckily, he did get cleared and they got to have a payoff. This has to have a payoff. The only problem I worry about is I wouldn't want that to be Danielson's last match. Granted, those two have such a great history. If it would, I'm not going to be disappointed by any means. But considering Danielson said this is his last year as a full-time pro wrestler, I don't know that that now would be the last match. But again, I'm not going to be disappointed if it is. And I think the build-up to it towards the end, it could be something where eventually Danielson – has his matches now with Ospreay, and he gets a couple more dream matches out of the way. We move into like early July, and Danielson just comes out one night and he goes, you've been talking about me for a year. And it just, mm-hmm. and that's the first line he has to say, and it could just take off from there and carry through Wembley in August. So I would love to see it, especially if Nigel's able to do it, and that's going to be his last match. I mean, it would be kind of poetic if it ends up being Nigel's last match and Danielson's last match as a full-time guy. So the more I talk myself into it, like I said, I said I wasn't going to be disappointed if it did happen, but now I kind of would, it would be kind of like, how they say in Moneyball, like how could you, they say, how is baseball not romantic? How could you say the same thing about pro wrestling? And I know there was a wrestler that said that a couple years ago too, pro wrestling could be romantic also. And that's one way it could happen. It would just be like a huge full circle to both those guys' careers. So I would be for it.
All right. I would be too, but I don't want to get my hopes up. So I'm kind of in that mode right now. Ryan, back to you for your final question for us tonight.
Final questions on Mercedes Mene. Comment she made about getting back to WWE. Has any female talent from AEW commented on her making that comment before she even debuted with the promotion on Wednesday?
Yeah, I know there was a little bit of an uproar in certain circles about an interview that Mercedes Moné did where she basically said, you know, I expect to be back in WWE someday. I don't know that anyone has commented on that as far as publicly the women in AEW. I don't think they should. You know, their locker room has had some tension over the years, and I don't think commenting on it and making a big deal out of it is going to help things. So just let it go. Let her come in. Let her do her thing. I certainly don't think, Tony, that means Moné is going to dog it in AEW at all. So I just think it's one of those things. Look, Mercedes Moné, when she does these interviews, she doesn't hold back. I mean, she's not someone who is careful with their words, doesn't want to offend anyone. She's not John Cena out there doing interviews. So I really don't think, if she's got enough going on in her life, she's got enough stuff that she can do where I don't think she's worried about offending anyone.
Yeah, I haven't heard any of the anyone else on the roster, male or female, from AEW bring it up, and I can't imagine that's going to happen either. Part of her presentation on Wednesday, and I thought immediately, she leaned really hard Wednesday night into the how excited she was to be in AEW and why she's there, and it did border, as much as I did love her debut, it bordered on like, all right, tone it down a little bit. You're turning it on a little thick. And it could have been because of the fact that she put that interview out there. And let's be honest, I think even if she had lied, she's going to end up in WWE again someday, even if it's in the Hall of Fame. There's no reason. There's no way she's not going to be in the Hall of Fame. She was one of the first her and Bianca Belair, the first two African-American women to main event of WrestleMania. That alone gets her in the Hall of Fame, even if her career had not been great, and her career was tremendous in the time she spent there. So one way or another, if the bottom fell out tomorrow, she gets into the WWE Hall of Fame, and that puts her into the WWE again. So I wasn't upset about it, and I can't imagine that, you know, that she's going to kind of dog it, as you said, either. She has something to prove. She's been gone for 2 years. She wanted to have a good year with New Japan last year. That got cut short. I think she has something to prove, and she's always kind of had that stigma as someone that can be injury prone, or, you know, and then there's also some detractors that say she walked out on WWE, and she has a lot that she wants to prove, and I'm excited for it, and, you know, that's where my head is in terms of that. She was always going to end up back in WWE just because they have a Hall of Fame.
All right, Ryan, thank you for the phone call this week. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Okay, thanks for taking the phone call.
All right. Let's go to the email. This is from Azan in St. Louis. He sends this one in. He says, hello, Greg and Tony. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Question number one, how do you expect Kyle O'Reilly to be used in this new, fresh AEW era? He has been used as a tag guy slash guy who sometimes interacts with the main event scene in the past of his career. You know, clearly they're setting him up to work with Roddy Strong and Adam Cole in some fashion. And right now it seems to be a question of whether Kyle O'Reilly is interested in that. Given the turn that Cole and his compadres have taken, is that a road Kyle O'Reilly wants to go down? And we've seen some hesitation in him to commit to really being a part of that, even though the Undisputed folks seem to want him on their side. So how do you think that plays out? I mean, does he eventually join this group, or is he going to kind of fight them alone and not succumb to the same thing that Adam Cole succumbed to?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I feel like all roads lead to some sort of either feud or association with the Undisputed Kingdom. He has such a detailed history with those guys going back to Ring of Honor, you know, all the way through NXT, back now into AEW. Part of me wants to see him, even if it's for 3 to 6 months, go off on his own and do something, because I think he deserves that. And I know those guys are all such good friends. Maybe that's what they want. But, man, he has a lot to offer. He is a great – I want to call, say it was mentioned in an email. I call – it's like he's a great utility guy. Like, he could work a main event style. He could work as a credible challenger. Or you could put him in a good mid-card feud for the international title or the TNT title, something like that. And he's going to shine no matter what because he's that talented. I'm hoping that while he had all that time off, he worked a little bit on some promo work because that's always been his weak spot. But I'd like to see him go his own way for 3-6 months because, like I said, we all know all roads head back to Undisputed Kingdom with those guys, whether it's with them or directly against them. But I'm really hoping he gets a chance to go out there and kind of make a mark for himself because he's been linked with those guys for the better part now of, what, the last 15 years. So hopefully that's where they go, but I the roads are leading it back that way.
I agree. I think it is something it's hard to break free from, right? Because when you're in that situation and you've been associated with a group for so long, it seems only natural to continue to develop that relationship, whether it's with them or against them. But I do think he has enough talent to go out on his own. I do wonder if he wasn't associated with the Undisputed Kingdom, does he go to ROH for something like the Pure title, which I know would fit his style and things like that? Or would he be kind of too big for ROH as it stands today? So that's something you got to keep in the back of your mind as well, for as associated as his career has been with Ring of Honor and with the way Tony Khan has sprinkled in a lot of ROH vets in with some new stars that he's tried to develop in ROH. You wonder if that's part of the thought process too. The second question Azan has is, what do you see as the direction of the WWE Women's Tag Division this year at WrestleMania? Will Belair and Naomi win the belts, and how will the Maxxine Dupri stuff play into it? I think the women's tag title match is kind of one of the last pieces of the puzzle to be put together for WrestleMania. I don't think there's a ton of thought that goes into it. I think it could be something they cobble together a tournament the last few weeks and have the winners face the women's tag champions. But certainly Maxxine Dupri and taking the real life, I don't even know what to call it, the real life booing, I guess, put quite simply, that she got at a house show and incorporating that into her character with Candice LeRae calling her out in the middle of a match on Raw this week, that could play a part in it. You know, you look at some of the pieces of the women's division that don't have anything else, that aren't involved in the main title picture. You've got Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley over here. You've got Bayley versus Io Shirai over here for the title. And then that leaves you with, you know, the rest of the Kabuki Warriors. You've got the Bianca Belair and Naomi who could be paired together. So you've got some pretty big names that if you want to get them on the card, you're probably going to have to put them on the card in a women's tag team title match. So is that kind of how you see it playing out, or do you see it playing out a little differently? Maybe they don't use the big names like Belair and Naomi in the tag team title match?
Yeah, I think so too. It's just the women's tag team titles, it's the one title that WWE, it doesn't need to exist. And it's just, and the thing is, what's crazy about it is there's enough women to support the division, but it's not, whether you want to say it's not treated with respect or it's just not given the time or the care put into it, much like we were just talking about the AEW women's division. Like, there's enough depth for the division to be sustainable, but it's like, other than, you know, March and April of each year, those tag titles in the women's division, they don't mean anything. And it's just, it's hard to get behind anything they do. I mean, I could see them going multiple directions. Like you said, it could be something thrown together as a multi-women or a multi-women team match. It could be, they could put together a real quick four-team tournament 2 weeks before WrestleMania. And it's a shame because it's Kairi Sane and it's Asuka, who are two great wrestlers in their own right that are now holding those titles. And hey, we've seen it before when it was Mercedes and Bayley. So it's not like it doesn't matter who it is. It's just a way to get them on that card. It's, you know, it's tough, but I could see it going any of those ways you spoke of. As for the Maxine Dupri stuff, that this past Monday, that might have been the most embarrassing segment in the Paul Levesque era. I don't know what that was. I cringed. I'm like, this is – I know what they're going for. They're trying to do the real – they're trying to mingle real life and, you know, kayfabe, and they're trying to make it – but how many people that were watching Raw Monday knew about that incident that happened at that live event 2 or 3 weeks ago? First of all, you waited 2 or 3 weeks. It wasn't exactly relevant anymore. And second of all, like, my go back to my first point. It was, who's really paying attention to that? And how many people watching that were completely confused? It kind of felt so Vince Russo-ish that I didn't understand how Paul Levesque even let that go on Monday Night Raw. If he'd have done something like that on Main Event, he just wanted to try it out. Sure, great. No one's watching Main Event. But on your, you know, what's going to be, again, because right now I say it's SmackDown based on viewership, it's going to be your flagship show again come 2025. I can't believe that made air. I cringed.
Going back to the women's tag teams, you know, I think they've done a nice job, better than I've expected, of creating some competition within the division. You know, you've got Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark teaming together. You've got Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. So they do have – there was a time when WWE had these women's tag titles and they only had one or two teams. So I do think they've done a better job of developing those teams, Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell, with the situation you're talking about. But as for the Maxine Dupri thing, I agree. I didn't like it. I didn't think it was necessary. I kind of understood what they were going for in that here's Candice LeRae, who this is the last person you'd expect to go in this direction, right? But it's WrestleMania season, and it's about doing anything you can to get onto that WrestleMania card, and that's what Candice LeRae is doing. And so, like, I get it from that point of view, but, yeah, I wish they hadn't gone that direction. I didn't think it was necessary. I think Maxine Dupri is a babyface enough, and I don't think you needed to add that layer to it. So that's what I would say about it. And then finally, Zahn's last point or last question for us. With the I Quit match this week on Dynamite is likely to be the end of the feud between Adam Copeland and Christian Cage. What are your overall thoughts on the story? So Adam Copeland, Christian Cage, I Quit match on Dynamite this week. I was one who thought Copeland should have come in as a partner of Christian's, but I'm glad he didn't. And I think the feud has played out pretty strongly. It's established Adam Copeland as a major player in AEW who's here to not just leech off of the younger guys, but really be a major player and sort of planted his flag in AEW. And I think it's helped Christian. You know, Christian has seemed even more dastardly in treating his best friend or former best friend this way. So I think both guys have benefited from it. I think they still left some meat on the bone in terms of storytelling. But overall, I think it's been pretty good. What have you thought of the Copeland Christian feud so far?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I initially feel the same way that you did at the beginning, where it probably would have, at least at the time, I thought it would be better, bring him in, put them together, tell the story from there. But then they did hook me at the beginning, and I was like, all right, you know what? I'm digging this. I'm into it. And then as the story went on, I agree with you also. I thought it was told really well, but there's been so many gaps in the story, and I know it's a long-term story, but long-term stories don't have to be 6 to 8 months. This could have been a 4-month story with the meat on the bone that you said was left there, just because there felt like there were gaps and different things like that, that where the story kind of fell off for a couple of weeks or a month, and then it picked back up. And you know, Christian has gone so far now with Adam Copeland that, hey, it's pro wrestling, but part of you goes, can they get back together? And I think if you believe the way I do, they'll find a way. They're going to team before they're both their careers are out. It's going to happen. But man, some of the stuff they've done to each other at this point, it makes you wonder. But, you know, I guess you look at Triple H and Shawn Michaels. They had a blood feud in 2002 also, and by, I think it was 2005. Granted, neither of these guys have 3 years left, I don't think, to stretch that out. You know, they were back together reforming DX for the first time, you know, and then 5 times later they did it again. But yeah, it's something. It's like I said, I've enjoyed this story, but because of the lulls in the story and the fact that they did leave some meat on the bone, I'm hoping that this is it. I mean, I could see them maybe squeezing one more match because they could say we have to end it in a cage or something like that. But I'm hoping it's over this Wednesday, and if not, it needs to be over at the next pay-per-view. But I'm more hopeful that it's done on Wednesday.
Right. I think they've gotten a lot of mileage out of it. And this is a story you can get a lot of mileage out of just because this is a unique relationship between Copeland and Christian. Not only did they debut together in WWE on the main roster, they had a lot of time together on the main roster. They have that real life story of, you know, being together as kids, as best friends. Mm-hmm. And so if there was a feud that they were going to draw out for months and months, this was probably the right one to do it with. Let's go back to the phones. We've got the 609 area code. This is Mike from Atlantic City. Mike, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing well, Mike. How are you?
Good. Doing good. Yeah, I guess I'll start off with Mercedes. I keep wanting to call her Sasha, too. I'm so used to saying Sasha Banks. So I may slip
a
few times.
I was the same with John Moxley and Dean Ambrose. When he moved to AEW, I really struggled with that
too.
One.
Yeah, I know. But, yeah, I'm happy she's back on TV now. I love Mercedes. She's always been my favorite women's wrestler. You know, I'd say of all time. Like, I'm a big, big Mercedes fan. Yeah, she's just a great wrestler, has the look. You know, she looks like $1 million. You know, she just she can go with anybody.
Yeah.
But I kind of wanted to see her in WWE more because I think there's just so many matches over there. You could have had, like, her against Tiffany Stratton would have been so good. Her against Jade would have been so good. Her against Rhea Ripley would have been so good. So, I mean, maybe we'll get those matches, you know, several years from now. But, yeah, I'm hoping in AEW we get a match with her and Britt Baker. I think that would be really good. But who do you think should be the – would you rather see Mercedes heel and then, like, maybe Britt be face? Because, like, Mercedes is such a good heel and a good trash talker.
Yeah.
I think maybe Britt being the face would be good. I don't know. Mercedes is so popular. I mean, what do you think? How long do you think she should stay being the face in AEW?
Yeah, I think right now it's going to be hard to turn her right away because I think, as you said, there was so much built-up interest, and she came across as such a big star, and big stars inherently kind of get that baby face reaction, you know? So I think it would be fine to try her as a baby face right away. She could do something, turn on Willow Nightingale or something like that, who's a beloved baby face herself, and turn herself heel. Because I do agree. I think she's a pretty good heel. But right now, I think fans are just so excited to see her at AEW, Tony. I think it would be hard to get that reception from the fans.
Yeah, Mike, I'll tell you what. You talk about all the matchups and, you know, there's going to be some good matchups for her, you know, in AEW as well. I mean, the ones that pop to the top of my head, you mentioned Britt Baker. I'll circle back to that because I have some thoughts. I think her and Deonna Purrazzo could have a great match. She could have a great match with Toni Storm. Mariah May, we have not got to see a lot of her yet, but that's another person she's going to be able to have a good match with. On a lesser level, it's not going to be someone that I think you could build a huge feud around, but she could have a great match with Serena Deeb. But when you talk about her and Britt Baker, the funny part about both of them is I think they're both natural heels. So you could go either way with that one.
Right.
It probably would depend on how fast you wanted to pull the trigger. I don't know if you caught the beginning of the show. If you're going to pull the trigger on a Sasha heel turn, I would say doing it against Willow Nightingale in maybe a couple months. If you want to do it early in the run, Willow is the perfect type of sympathetic babyface to turn on. especially because they have the story that they could play off from New Japan a year ago. If it's not going to be that and you're going to keep Sasha the babyface longer, then you could kind of let the story play out and see what happens organically in 3-6 months and see where her and Britt are, Britt Baker at that time, and whichever one you think is the better one to pull the trigger on going heel, do it. But it's funny, like, between the two of them, both natural heels, so I don't know which direction you go, and a lot of it might just be timing.
Yeah. Mike, your reaction and your second question for us tonight.
Now, where is Britt Baker, by the way? Is she injured?
From what I heard, she was injured. She was nursing some injuries for a while. I know for a fact, and I'm not a stalker, I promise. She was in Orlando last week because she was putting it all over her social stories. She did an interview last week where she basically said she can't wait to get back in the ring at AEW and start, you know, cutting promos and making challenges. And that's why a big part of me really thought she would have been the one to maybe come out and interrupt the debut, because I thought that was going to be a great logical first feud if you didn't go the route that they're going. Because, you know, she comes in, she's going to be she's going to be a big baby face at first. And then, you know, Britt comes out, and like I said, they're both natural heels. You could have kicked, you know, the Boston fans were not going to cheer Britt Baker on her comeback the same night that Mercedes comes out. So that would have been, in my mind, a perfect kickoff to that type of feud. So I can't imagine, I don't know if Greg knows anything, I can't imagine a return isn't imminent. Like I mentioned earlier in the show too, if it's going to be something very short-term with Willow and they want Britt to come back, and the love fest with Sasha, with Mercedes, is going to it's going to be there for quite a while. And you could pull the trigger with Britt even in the next month if you want to bring her back. So I'm hopeful as you are, because I think that's a feud that could also, you know, be really fun to watch.
I was going to ask
fans,
you, Tony. I was going to ask Tony earlier about what feuds he was looking forward to seeing Mercedes Moné in, and one with Dr. Britt Baker is the one that I had on the top of my mind. I think that would be really good. Mike, back to you.
Yeah, I know that's one of a big Brit said that's her dream match, actually, is against Mercedes. I'm pretty sure, or at least one of her dream matches. I'm pretty sure she said that in the past.
Yeah.
So I'm sure she'd be pushing for a feud with her. And, yeah, it'd be a lot of fun, that feud. I mean, people love Britt, too. I mean, it's been, like, imagine that match, like, in Pittsburgh. Like, that'd be so, like, interesting. Where Britt's from. I mean, that would be, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, Mike. I'm actually from Pittsburgh, so it would be an interesting development to watch that live, because if you bring Britt back as the heel, that it's going to be like a Montreal situation where the crowd's going to flip in Pittsburgh, because they will boo Sasha or keep doing. First of all, the Sasha Mercedes thing, I have not had this problem the last 2 years since she left WWE until tonight. I don't know if I have Wrestling Night in America jitters or whatever, but I've done it like 5 times. Anyways, I don't.
Well, that's fine.
So that the script would be flipped here in Pittsburgh if Britt is supposed to be the heel that night. And it exists because I know this city, every time I've been here in Pittsburgh, they absolutely love her. And it doesn't matter if she's a heel or babyface. I've gone to Cleveland a few times. Britt gets booed out of the building just because she's from Pittsburgh. So, and she's really not from Pittsburgh. It's actually Punxsutawney, but that's neither here nor there. But I think it would be so much fun to watch that development. But you'd get a kind of like a Bret Hart type Montreal vibe flip if those two dudes come to Pittsburgh and you try to push Britt as the heel. It wouldn't work, but it would be fun anyway.
Yeah, because they would boo Sasha, wouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. My next topic's about what do I want to ask? Yeah, about Rhea Ripley. Like what I'm seeing is, like, because Liv Morgan keeps saying how she's gonna, you know, something like she's gonna not her story's gonna be finished, or she's gonna get her revenge. I think she says something about like her revenge will be over after she takes Rhea's title, you know, and gets her revenge on Rhea. So I definitely think that's going to be a match at the pay-per-view after Mania. I don't know if it'll be for the title or not. Maybe Liv will cost Rhea the match. That'd be interesting at Mania. But do you guys see a Liv-Rhea one-on-one match happening? I think it's going to be at the pay-per-view after Mania. Like, I think it's Backlash in France. I don't think it'll be a triple threat. I don't think they're going that route. But in my opinion, they got to do that. I mean, there's a story to be told there. They got to do that match at some point down the road, because why wouldn't Liv want to get revenge on Rhea? So what do you guys think about that?
I think at some point, I'm not sure when that point is. I wonder if they'll try to get it done before WrestleMania and maybe have Liv versus Rhea as a feature Raw match, because I know that all the talk is about WrestleMania. I know the build is to that. But at some point, you've also still got to be putting on matches that people want to see on TV every week. And I think you've got enough built up, as you sort of alluded to there, Mike. I think you've got enough built up in this Rhea Ripley-Liv Morgan feud where you could run that match before WrestleMania. And you could have Liv Morgan say, you know, hey, I'm going to try to wear you out before WrestleMania. I'm going to try to put you on the shelf so you don't get your WrestleMania. Whatever the case may be, they could do something before WrestleMania with them too. I'm not convinced Becky Lynch doesn't come out of WrestleMania as the winner. So if you do Rhea Ripley versus Liv Morgan on a pay-per-view afterward, it would be non-title. And I'm not sure if that would be enough to put that match on pay-per-view if it was non-title. So there's going to be a lot of moving parts here, Tony, to this one. I would call it inevitable Rhea Ripley versus Liv Morgan match. Do you see that taking place before or after WrestleMania?
I agree with you that it's inevitable. And you could tell the way they're treating Becky even right now is they're keeping her occupied with another story while she is approaching her matchup with Rhea Ripley. And there's no reason that they can't be doing the same thing with Rhea and Liv at the moment, and maybe that peaks, because we have, what, like 35 days, so that's 5 weeks. That could peak 2 to 3 weeks before WrestleMania if you wanted to do it that way. And then, you know, and then you could kind of come back to the main story of Becky and Rhea. And then, yeah, you know, you could even revisit it right after WrestleMania, assuming Rhea actually retains, because I'm of the opinion that Rhea needs to be their Roman Reigns right now, although she's at least around every week, thank God. But I think she could really hold that title for even another year before you really decide to take it off her. My biggest fear is that she costs Rhea the title at WrestleMania. I don't want to see that. I just want to see a good straight-up match with Becky and Rhea, because I think they could tear the house down. But I think there's a possibility, you know, you could have this good mini-feud, this good mini-story that kind of culminates, but then gets shelved a little bit, and then you can come back to it after WrestleMania as well. And they could find a clever way to do that. But like I said, the biggest thing I don't want to see is her get involved in that match and be a determining factor.
Mm-hmm. Mike, anything else for us tonight?
More about the women, actually. What do you see Tiffany Stratton doing at Mania? She's just like, she's just a star, another star. I think she's going to be probably your Money in the Bank winner this year. Like, you see her against Bel Air, or like, what do you think they do with her? And, I mean, I think they got to have Jade wrestle too. Like, I really want to see Jade in the ring at Mania too.
I doubt Jade gets in at Mania. I mean, maybe if they do. They have enough ammunition right now for that women's battle royal that they sometimes do, sometimes don't, right? The men have the Andre the Giant battle royal. I know the women have the Mae Young battle royal, or have had in the past. I think you could make an argument for Liv Morgan winning that, and maybe that's how you get her into a title match with Rhea Ripley after WrestleMania. If you want to debut Jade Cargill, I think having her win that match would be a good way to do it. I think Tiffany Stratton would be a contender to win that match. I just don't see again, you know, I kind of walk through the scenario of the women at WrestleMania where it's probably going to be the two title matches. It's probably going to be a women's tag title match. And then, you know, maybe one other women's match. But then I'm not sure who that would be. You know, is it Bianca Belair? Is it Tiffany Stratton? I don't think they debut Jade on WrestleMania. They just haven't built up to that moment yet. And I feel like you want Jade's debut to be a big deal. And I know she's kind of been in the background on TV every once in a while, but, you know, I would like to see them put a little more thought and a little more effort into her WrestleMania match. So I think more of winning the Battle Royal would be up her alley in terms of what they do with her. But the same thing with Tiffany Stratton. You know, Tiffany doesn't really have anything that strikes me as a WrestleMania match right now. And we're, you know, 2-3 weeks out. It's getting to be nitty-gritty time here. And so, I don't know. I'd rather they be left off the card or play a prominent role, maybe even winning the Mae Young Battle Royal that would likely take place on SmackDown the night before, as opposed to just being thrown onto the WrestleMania card as an afterthought, just to be on the show. Tony, what are your thoughts on Tiffany, Jade, and what I talked about there?
Yeah, you know, a month ago I would have disagreed with you, but man, and we all knew that if you watched Tiffany Stratton in NXT that, like, yeah, she came along nicely. She really was getting it. And then they put the title on her and she did a great job holding the title, but she really had a hell of a breakout match at the Elimination Chamber. And mm-hmm. I don't know if the higher ups there expected that or not, but it happened. Cause before then I even thought, all right, you know, maybe it's going to take her some time and the crowd may get used to her because, you know, that's just how it goes. And I was of the same mindset of, you know, that, you know, Jade's going to be at WrestleMania, but then they got lightning in a bottle here with Tiffany. She seems like she had the breakout moment a lot earlier than anyone seemed it was going to be, but you're right. And I talked about it earlier. There's a lot of depth in that division. It just seems like they need to figure some things out because there's so much talent in that WWE women's division. So, I could see a situation where either Liv or Tiffany win that Battle Royal to maybe secure a title spot after WrestleMania, or maybe one of them wins the Battle Royal and one of them wins some sort of tournament right after WrestleMania as well to get one gets a title shot on one side, the other gets a title shot on the other. But actually, I think they're both on Raw. Is that right? So it probably wouldn't work. Or no, Tiffany is on SmackDown, right?
She's on SmackDown.
So had sick brain moment there for a minute. but yeah, it could work. But at this point, like I said, a month ago, I would have said differently. At this point, I'm thinking for Raw or SmackDown. More likely now, I would say Raw, just because of where the two shows are headed later this year and into 25, you know, with the TV rights. I'm thinking Jade, I would definitely debut her on Raw the night after WrestleMania and go from there, because if you don't have anything really special for her, considering all the hype that was put into the signing, then you're kind of doing a disservice to her to just throw her out there for a random match if you're not going to put a lot of thought into it. So I would go Raw after WrestleMania for Jade.
Yeah, the idea of Jade being one of the big stars, I know she's already debuted in the Rumble, so it wouldn't really be a debut, but one of the big stars to be involved in something significant on the Raw after WrestleMania, or even the SmackDown after WrestleMania. I was considering that as you were speaking too. And so I think that's, you know, an alternate route that you could take with her. Mike, really appreciate the phone call this week. Thanks for the topics.
Oh yeah, no problem. Thank you guys. Have a great night.
Hey, Greg, also.
You too.
Real quick, you know, when
yes.
you talk about these Raws and SmackDowns after WrestleMania, especially Raw, you know, the last couple of years, the Raws after WrestleMania have been, you know, minus maybe one segment from each of those shows. They have not been great. And to get back on track, if you include Jade with that and, you know, you have some really big things lined up, even more so now, that makes me believe, like, they need something big, a couple big things for that Raw after WrestleMania. So even more so, that makes me want to wait to pull the trigger on Jade for that.
And Triple H strikes me as someone who would want to make those Raw after WrestleMania special again.
Right.
In a way that, as you mentioned, they haven't really been the last couple of years. So, yeah, definitely a direction I could see them going with Jade. Okay, back to the phones. The 305 area code DJ from Miami is up next. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us?
I got a couple things. I guess we can go with EAW. Tony's booking is crazy. Like, I don't understand. Like, I feel like more and more it's very strange to me how he does weird different things. Like, Swerve is getting more and more babyface, but Nana is still there, and he still has his heel faction. But then, at the end of the day, it's like, wait, the other guy's doing the same thing. Don, he's trying to push one baby face and has a heel faction too. It's like, okay, that's kind of strange. But I feel like if Swerve is, I like Swerve, but it's not time, you know, for him. Like, he needs like to keep on doing a little more things. But then they also have, you know, like I said last time, that, you know, they also have the other guy who is doing the same thing. It's like, why are all these guys doing one thing when, you know, they all have different factions? I don't get it. Like Wardlow, it's like the weirdest thing. It's like, you know, it's so weird. Like, what is going on with this?
You can see those similarities that you bring up. I do think, for the record, I disagree with DJ, and I'm sure I've disagreed with him before on this topic. I do think it's time to give Swerve Strickland the ball and see if he can run with it. Not to say Samoa Joe hasn't done a fantastic job, because he has, and if you want to keep the belt on Samoa Joe for another month or two, I'm all for it. But I do think Swerve should at least be in the conversation, and he should continue to be booked as a big star so his star doesn't lose its luster while he's still chasing the championship. Will Ospreay in the Don Callis family, it seems like they can't possibly keep that up for very long, Tony. I think the fans are too much into Will Ospreay, and he's cutting babyface promos. And so I would expect that to be maybe more of a short-term thing. But what do you think about what DJ is saying in terms of just kind of the similarities in some of these storylines that have cropped up in AEW?
Yeah, what's funny is I had not thought about the similarities directly between Ospreay and Swerve. So that those are some interesting points. When it comes to Ospreay, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they're letting it breathe a little bit, but I think we're going to see that split sooner than later. It's not something that could be held up long term. He's not going to be, you know, with the Don Callis family very long. And I think, like, that was one of those things that kind of, it lingered over from Wembley last year, and I think it was just like a natural way to say, oh yeah, remember he was aligned with Dawn. And even the way Ospreay's even been treating it on TV too, is he almost in a subtle way looks, he has a look on his face like, oh, I'm part of your family, it's news to me, I thought that was a one-time thing, is how he like almost plays it off. So I can see that. I'm glad they're letting it breathe, and I can see that's how it gets blown off maybe in the next month. When it comes to Swerve, I'm in full agreement with you, Greg, that it is time for him. And I really, part of me, as going back to like World's End, I was of the belief that, and I said it at the time, I said it on The Torch and I said it on ProWrestling.net in 5 different columns, that I could have seen Samoa Joe as a 1-week champion, or I could have seen him as like a 6-month champion. And I still feel that way, but it's tough because they got something in Joe as champion, because the crowd obviously loves him, and the guy deserved another world title run before the end of his career, and he's doing a great job. But I still feel like you got to pull the trigger on someone new, and it has to be Swerve. And there are those threads. He does have to he does need to shed Prince Nana, his association, and I guess technically his leadership of the Mogul Embassy. It does have to end in the not too distant future as well. But I like Samoa Joe's work. I think he's done a phenomenal job. And if they did decide to maybe keep that title on him until Double or Nothing. That would kind of lend my credence that I could have seen him as a 1 week champion or 6 months, because that puts him right at that mark.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Swerve has to be your next champion, but man, it's a hell of a time in AEW. There's sharks in the water with Ospreay, and you got, Omega will be back at some point. MJF is obviously going to be back. I would say probably for the second half of the year. You'd imagine Adam Cole is going to be back second half of the year. Him and I'm not comparing the two. I don't need hate social media, but between Swerve and Hangman Page, it's AEW's own version of like an Austin Rock. And I'm not saying those guys are Austin and The Rock, but I could see those two being big rivals for years to come on and off. There's sharks all over the place. And, you know, Swerve's going to have to continue to step up his game, but I have no reason to believe he can't. And I'm so impressed with him. And I think his time is coming, and it's just a matter of, is it going to be a dynasty or Double or Nothing for me? And, you know, I don't know how you get past another main event of him at Dynasty and then do it at Double or Nothing. So my bet right now is April 21st, Swerve's your new champ.
I also do think it's going to be hard to hold off on Will Ospreay as champion,
mm-hmm.
just because
mm-hmm.
the way he debuted and the way he came in against Konosuke Takeshita and the match that they had at Revolution, you know, I was of the opinion, hey, I like Swerve, but like, strap this guy up right now. Like that's how
yeah.
impressive it was when he's clearly the best wrestler in the company. How long can you hold him back from, if not being champion, then being in the title picture? And who knows, maybe that title picture is Will Ospreay versus Swerve Strickland at some point. I don't think anyone's going to be saying no to that. So that could be on the docket for later this year as well. DJ, back to you for your second question for us.
Yep. I just want to say one thing is if he pushes and he dead, they want to, you know, put the rocket on him. I just think like he needs to get rid of Nana, or Nana needs to break out with his group. So it's one of the other,
mm-hmm.
I don't,
yep.
what would help him the most, you know, because he can talk himself. So maybe he'll get rid of Nana. So we'll see coming up, you know.
Yep.
My next thing is, I feel like going to EAW again, one more thing is, they're writing some weird things, Tony. like, they're doing the thing with the Bucks, and then now they're doing the thing with how now they're doing it with the Black. It's like, what are they doing with these heels? Like, sometimes it's like, I don't understand. Like, I thought Jay and Jay were heels too, and now they're like, join our group. I thought that was a heel group too. It's like, I don't know who's a heel, who's face anymore. It's like, what is going on with, you know, it's like, come to our group, but that's a heel. But they're saying, come with our group, they're a heel too. It's like, I don't understand how you're booking some weird stuff, you know, and then everybody wants to be a flip-flopper. It's like, okay, I thought Riley was going to be heel. No, he's going to be face. I don't know what he's going to be, because that's the only thing he might turn again. I don't know. It's like, he looks like a hobo. I'm so confused what is going on with these flip-floppers. Like, just be face or heel.
Well, Kyle O'Reilly is a babyface. Jay White and his group obviously turned heel on,
mm-hmm.
you know, Max Caster and the like. House of Black are heels. Young Bucks are heels. I mean, I think those are pretty self-explanatory. I don't know where the confusion comes in on any of those. But as a larger point, I guess, Tony, we can kind of talk about the Blackpool Combat Clubs of that ilk in AEW and their desire, and they've said it in interviews before, to, you know, not have a hard and fast rule about whether they're baby faces and heels, and kind of adjust as they go, depending on their opponent. Is that a recipe for success in AEW? I think a team like the Blackpool Combat Club, and I know Wade Keller will disagree, I think a team like the Blackpool Combat Club can get away with it. I think other groups may not be able to get away with it as much. So it could be just a case-by-case basis on who it works for and what those personalities are in that faction.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I don't mind shades of gray here and there. I'll go through some of the groups you've already mentioned. I mean, for me, the Young Bucks at this point, they're firmly established heels. No doubt in my mind there. And I actually have appreciated the work they've done in the past 4 weeks or so. They're finally actually cutting promos. They seem to have a direction, and I'm appreciating what they're doing. When you talk about the Black Bullet Club Gold, the whole thing with them and the Acclaimed, I hated it from the start. I didn't even expect it to go as long as it did with them all being cutesy friends. It just doesn't fit the Jay White character. And I mentioned this with Wade a couple weeks ago after post-show Dynamite. If I put on my fan hat, my wrestling soul has been destroyed by what they're doing with Jay White, because there's so much talent with that guy all around and on the mic and in the, you know, in the ring, that they got to figure him out, because a year ago, I would kid of him and never imagined he'd be buried down the card like he is right now. Then we could get to, you know, the Black Bull Combat Club. And then I think he also mentioned House of Black. That I do have some issues with that as well. I know the shades of gray thing, and it depends on who we're fighting. Blackpool Combat Club at least tries to pull it off a little bit better, but even then, when they're supposed to be working heels, they're playing to the crowd. They need to do better when it comes to that. If that's their philosophy, is that whoever they're facing, you know, cheer us or boo us, depending on who we're facing and who you like, fine enough. But if you're working heel that match, work heel that match. But the biggest miscast that I would agree on is House of Black. There's no reason those guys, over the last 2 years plus, I think it's around 2 years, whatever it is, since they've debuted, especially Malakai Black. Boy, you know, Malakai Black was the one that caused the downfall of Cody Rhodes in AEW. If you go back to his debut, Cody Rhodes was a babyface. Malakai Black was brought in as a heel. The fans loved him so much that they instantly turned heel on Cody Rhodes, who they'd only loved since the beginning, basically. And they still keep trying to put the square peg in the round hole with Malakai Black. Fans want to cheer him. And, you know, by way of him, the House of Black. And it's just, they're the biggest miscast group in AEW, probably in the history of the short history of the company, because that's the one I could definitely get behind DJ on, is the House of Black. The other ones, though, to me, everything seems like it's fitting where it's supposed to be right now, aside from, like I said, my small qualms with Blackpool. But yeah, House of Black, they're so miscast that it's embarrassing. And I just know that you talk about Sasha Banks being honest in her interviews. If you could put some truth serum into Malakai Black right now, I think he'd tell you to go back to WWE tomorrow, because I know him and Triple H have a great relationship. And that's one guy, I'm sure as soon as he can, he'll be out the door.
All right, DJ, your final question for us tonight.
The final thing is, I feel like going next door. I've been watching. It's like, I really, when Nikki, all they say is family this and family that. I feel like I really, really, really wish Dustin was there instead of Seth. I wish Brandy was there. Same with, you know, old Brandy when she was doing the cargo thing. But I feel that would be more compared to Seth and this. Because I feel like going into this, Seth is going to lose. And I feel like then who's going to be the next babyface going into, you know, I know that, you know, they're going to have somebody come up because Seth will be hurt or whatever, so he'll lose. But now, you know, they can't bring new baby faces up because they're not really pushing really that many baby faces. We have Cody, you know. I mean, who do you think? Do you think that hopefully maybe Randy will switch to Raw or something and they'll bring some new flavor to Raw? Or do you think that they're not going to push Raw that hard and then, you know, they'll have Drew as champion for a little while, you know, and then because WWE is going to Netflix, so at the end of the day, who's going to be the champion after WrestleMania months later, and who's the babyface they're going to pull up? You know what I'm saying? Because you know, Cody's going to be on his dream, so do you think they're going to have another babyface, or we're just going to have a straight heel And then because Cody is baby, you know what I'm saying? Are they going to flip-flop?
So are you asking who the next big baby face is going to be?
Yeah, because Cody will be doing his thing. So then who are we going to have against Drew coming up? You know, because, you know,
they're going to get... I think you could do something with Seth Rollins again. You know, I think we also have to keep in mind, Tony, that historically we've had a superstar shakeup slash draft in the weeks or months after WrestleMania. So that could certainly change the complexion of the brands. And if Seth loses to Drew, you could have somebody come over from SmackDown like a Kevin Owens or Randy Orton in the draft or in the shakeup and be the top babyface there. So, you know, I think there's that we have to keep in mind as well. I think after, you know, you got Cody Rhodes, who, let's say he beats Roman Reigns, one would assume he spends most of his time on SmackDown. Seth Rollins loses to Drew McIntyre. So Raw all of a sudden gets thin on babyfaces at the top. Who do you see maybe filling that gap there, Tony, on Raw?
So I guess, first of all, I'll circle back to the comment DJ made about he doesn't like the Seth and Cody dynamic so much. And I would agree. It's a little forced, a little convoluted. We also got to remember it was a backup plan. You know, CM Punk was supposed to really figure into these plans for WrestleMania. And I think this is a pivot. And I think that's why it feels a little forced, a little convoluted. And the fact that, you know, Seth has been inserted into the story. Because, man, could you think if for that tag match, if we had CM Punk inserted into that instead of Seth Rollins, you're talking about another Paul Heyman guy that's involved. And I think that maybe that's where that story was supposed to go. But I'll come back to the main question now. You know, after WrestleMania, let's assume Drew's your champion, Cody's your champion, your two big champions. Like you said, you obviously have the return. I know we've seen the match 3 or 4 times now, but the match is still good. You could definitely do Cody and Drew again as a rematch at Backlash. You still have Jey Uso in the wings. You know, there's the bloodline stuff that's going on with Drew. Drew's referencing The Rock a lot. So there's going to be some sort of intersection of those families, whether it be Jey Uso, whether it be someone from the bloodline, whether, like you said, there's going to be a shakeup. It could be someone, you know, it could be Solo Sikoa. There's going to be some sort of intermingling after WrestleMania, I believe, with the bloodline and Drew McIntyre, just because of how much Drew continues to bring up The Rock. Months down the line, obviously Drew won't keep CM Punk's name out of his mouth. You're going to have that as well. Assuming Drew's resigned, I can't imagine he's not. He's in such a high-profile spot. If he's in that high-profile of a spot and he has out of contract in May, then I'd be shocked. The other one, though, the wild card in my mind is a guy that, even though he's been a heel since his main roster debut, you feel like there's a shift just because of the respect for his work and what he's done. You got Gunther sitting there with the Intercontinental Championship. And it could be one of those organic babyface turns that just, after a while, you can't help but start to love the guy and respect his work. And he could be someone that ends up challenging Drew. And boy, those two had great chemistry a year ago at WrestleMania. Granted, you had Sheamus in the picture as well. But you have someone like Gunther that could go on to challenge Drew McIntyre. And maybe if it's by SummerSlam, you know, maybe Gunther hasn't lost by then. Or even if he has, you know, that's, you know, the big stepping stone for him is going to be to main event status. And why not have Drew McIntyre versus Gunther at SummerSlam, and maybe that's Gunther's crowning moment, you know? Or I believe they have a UK show coming up later this year as well. I know there's a show in Germany, right? Right at the end of this year. I mean, that could be Gunther's crowning moment as well. He goes to Germany later this year. He wins the world title. There's, you know, like I said, there's lots of solutions to these problems. And like I said, Paul Levesque's done a great job. There's so many ways you could go. And you could have never said that year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago under Vince McMahon. So I am not worried like I would have been in years past.
All right, DJ, thank you for the phone call this week.
I'll see you next week. Thanks.
All right. We've got a couple more phone calls to get to, but before that, I want to hit the email bag again. This is from John. He says, This is about the Bloodline. I know there's still three SmackDowns to go, but The Rock has appeared 3 weeks in a row and is not scheduled for next week. Plus, over the last year or so, not much has tended to happen on the go-home shows, which is more typically a pre-show for the PLEs, and Roman very rarely appears on the final SmackDown before a PLE. Plus, if you are that one's for me, I guess. So he wants to talk about the past and present of the Bloodline storyline. He says, Roman formed the Bloodline in 2020. He dominated SmackDown, tried to enlist a reluctant Jey Uso, a babyface at the time, into the faction, who had seen Roman's changed demeanor, and they had a great feud for a number of months. Jey reluctantly joined Roman and Paul Heyman after Roman threatened to hurt an already injured Jimmy Uso, and then Jimmy later also reluctantly joined Roman's Bloodline. Throughout the pandemic era, there was great character acting and development and a lot of intimate backstage promos and in-ring. We got a lot of subtleties, and the lack of crowd made this seem like a prestige drama of the highest order. This is also the era when Roman was smashing people, epitomized by him sacking Daniel Bryan and Edge at WrestleMania. Solo Sikoa was introduced at Clash at the Castle, and he's been hot and cold, but his peak was arguably going into SummerSlam last year when he grabbed the lei before Roman and stared at it. Seeds were planted. The Usos versus Roman and Solo at Money in the Bank was arguably the last time the storyline reached relatively close to the peaks of 2021. The feud is still compelling some weeks, but various factors such as relatively poor writing, Roman's schedule, and the storyline's impeccably high standards have affected the storyline in a negative way. Currently, The Rock has entered the storyline and his performance has been good, but it's questionable how much he's added to the storyline. What are your highlights of the Bloodline storyline so far? I do think, and this goes back to my point that I made last year, I think the Cody Rhodes should have won at WrestleMania last year. Because I don't really think, I think since then, especially in the last 6 months or so, the train has really slowed in terms of the Bloodline storyline. I think a lot of the storyline could have been told even if Cody had won the title last year. Certainly this, what will eventually become a disagreement over the head of the table with Roman Reigns could happen without the title. I think it maybe the title makes it a bigger deal because that's Roman's proof that he is head of the table. But I still think as far as family goes, could still have that feud even without the title in play. And some would argue it's better if the title isn't in play because it could be a distraction and The Rock's not going to win the title anyway, so it could be a giveaway that he's not going to win. All of that said, I do think also the pattern of Roman's matches have really worn out their welcome lately. You know, I was at the Royal Rumble when Roman won by interference yet again, and the fans just didn't care. I mean, they had become numb to it, and that's unfortunate. So I don't know if there's a particular beat of the storyline. Solo Sikoa's debut, I think, was really good. I think a lot of the stuff very early on with the will they or won't they with Jimmy and Jey and the disagreement between those two brothers and how it played out was very well done. So I think those were a couple of the high points of the Reigns storyline, but I wouldn't really point to anything in the last calendar year that I maybe, you know, set output since WrestleMania last year that I would point to as a high point of this feud or of the storyline, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about the history of the Bloodline, I mean, for me, the highlight was the huge Sami Zayn arc that was supposed to go, what, a month? And they got like 10 months out of it. And to get as much juice out of that as they did is a testament to not only to Roman Reigns, but of course, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, the Usos, considered like they all had such big parts to play in that arc. And boy, you can make so many arguments about the first quarter of last year that, you know, could you have put the title on Sami? You know, yeah, you could have. Could you have done this? Could you have done that? But you had people, even though you really did believe in probably in the bottom of your heart, you know, that it was going to be Roman and Seth. Roman and Cody at last year's WrestleMania. You still were left at times going, but maybe they could do it. And it was, boy, was that exciting to watch. Like I said, that big arc for me is, and I know it's, you're saying, man, you're taking 10 months. I'm sorry. It was a great 10 months. It was, it's the best long-term storytelling that we've seen since like the McMahon-Austin story 25 years ago. So I have to settle with that one. When you're talking about last year's WrestleMania though, and Roman not losing to Cody, you're preaching to the choir. I've been adamant from last May through early, even like up until late last year. I've been on record on in the Torch articles I've written. I've been on record in the ProWrestling.net articles I've written. There's no way, and you still can't convince me even a year later, and even more so a year later, that there's no way that Roman should still have that champion, that Universal Championship. It just, if I work backwards evenly, you already mentioned some of it. You could have had your dream match this year, and you know, there was no title involved. It would have been just as huge. You know, The Rock and Roman could have their match, and you could have two world title matches at WrestleMania, and it would still be the biggest WrestleMania of all time. Might even be bigger than it already is. Moving backwards, you know, Roman, it's funny, and pun intended, I guess, I don't acknowledge this record. He's had like 54 title defenses compared to, you look at other guys that have had runs this long, they're in easy triple digits, some of them up near 500 defenses. He's had 10% of that. I do not acknowledge this as a real record-holding defense, and I understand it's a different world now. These guys aren't working 320 dates a year, but even if he was working once a month at a pay-per-view, defending it, you know, the old 30-day rule, I would respect this kayfabe record and say, you know what, I appreciate it, but it didn't need to happen. You know, last summer, the stuff that they did with he lost the tag match to Jey Uso, and then Jey Uso loses it at SummerSlam. That's when it really seemed to kind of hit a wall. And, of course, bringing The Rock back has really helped reignite the Bloodline story in general. But I, to this day, agree that that title should have changed hands last year at WrestleMania. And the last point I'll make, because I know I'm very much long-winded on this, but it's a topic I'm passionate about. You also created another world title. You created a second world title because you wanted to create this fake record, a fake record of a fake kayfabe record. It's like, you just get me fired up with this. None of this needed to happen over the last 12 months. I really believe they could be running with one world champion right now. You wouldn't have had to create that second world title, but if you wanted to, you still could have done it. But the reason they created this is because they didn't want to take the title off Roman, and he never defends it. Like, what did he defend it? I know I've talked about this with Wade, and it's like he defended it at SummerSlam. He defended it once in the fall, defended it. So he's defended, what, four times in a year? That's embarrassing. It's not a real record. That's the end of my rant. But one more thing, because I am rambling. A while back, I did say that I thought there was 35 days still left till WrestleMania. I am telling you, from my trip to Orlando to the week with pneumonia, I did slip into a time vortex. We're 20 days away. So everything I said earlier about maybe squeezing the Liv Morgan story in, I definitely wouldn't do it, but I'm sure we'll edit that out. It's not a big deal.
Oh, no, we're keeping that in, Tony. We're keeping that in.
I know.
Ever since the pandemic, time has kind of lost all meaning anyway. So I don't blame you. You're not the only one to lose track of what's when and where. Back to John's question. He said he lists the pros and cons of the current Bloodline storyline. He said the pros are that WWE is listening to the fans and Cody's allowed to finish his story. The Rock seems motivated. The storyline weaving across Raw and SmackDown, including many players, including Drew and Seth. Tag team match with Rock and Cody. Tag team match with Rock and the Cody Roman singles match is a great hook for casual fans to see both nights, planting some seeds for the future. Performances have all been excellent. His cons are Rock doesn't seem too integrated with the Bloodline, and his promos have mostly been his 90s shtick, and some fans see that as self-indulgent. Seth and the World Heavyweight Championship seem like a fourth wheel. Roman possibly feeling relatively diminished standing next to The Rock as his younger, less famous cousin. Jimmy and Solo seeming like afterthoughts. The ratings show Rock has had only minimal impact in each appearance, even though he's considered one of the biggest movie stars in the world. The nimbleness of WWE listening to fans also means some questionable rushed creative decisions, such as Cody changing his mind on giving The Rock his match, lack of clarity on how much power Rock actually has, Rock's final boss claim, why Roman suddenly wanted The Rock match, etc. What are your thoughts on my pros and cons, and what would you add to each list? I think it's pretty, you know, when I laid out, we probably won't get to it, which is fine because John's addressing it in his question, but I had scheduled us to talk about The Rock and his performance in Memphis on Friday, Tony. A lot of the stuff that I was going to mention in terms
good,
of him
because I want
seeming
to talk
like
about
he's okay, we'll talk about it here, but him seeming like
good.
He's bigfooting Roman Reigns and feeling like a bigger star than Reigns is something that John addresses. You know, how he's been integrated into the storyline is something John addresses. So I think John lists some very good pros and cons. I think it's a very complete list. I would agree with most, if not all of them. Do you have any pros and cons of The Rock's involvement or the current storyline generally that you would add to that list?
No, I was going to agree with you too. Like, that was very well written, a very complete list, a list that you can't really argue much with. And I'm glad you brought up Friday. I'm not going to go into it yet. I want to see where you want to go with it. But because we've talked a lot, other than the specific return of Sasha Reese, or gee, I did it again. The return of, or the debut of Mercedes on Wednesday, we haven't really talked about anything specific to the past week. We've talked about a lot of overarching stuff, and don't get me wrong, it's been a blast. But I think we should talk about Friday because I have some thoughts about that Rock opening segment as well. And Friday was actually a very newsworthy show for SmackDown. So if you want to get into that, we could definitely do that. But I'll let you take the lead on that because I think there's some things we could dig into from SmackDown if that's where you wanted to go.
Well, we'll finish off John's question. We got a couple callers on hold, so we'll see what they want to talk about first, and then if we get some time, we'll talk about it, because I do think it was a big deal, his appearance and the concert, the Rock concert, as it were, on SmackDown. So John's final point, a brief discussion of the potential future after WrestleMania. He says, I think Rock Roman seems a certainty, but the question is when. Cody could win the championship at WrestleMania and move to SmackDown and face someone like a red-hot Solo Sikoa, a heel or babyface Randy Orton, Logan Paul, AJ Styles, even perhaps a babyface like LA Knight. You could even do a rematch versus Roman, or he defends against The Rock. Roman versus The Rock seems a certainty, and the two most likely occasions for this are either SummerSlam or next year's WrestleMania. It all depends on Rock's schedule. Looking into the longer term, you could also have Solo be the leader of the Bloodline and turn Roman babyface maybe a couple years from now. To summarize, I think the inclusion of Rock has been a mixed bag, but he's still been mostly very entertaining. As for my predictions for WrestleMania, I'm leaning toward Roman turning on Rock in the tag match and that setting up Roman Rock down the line, but I prefer Cody winning the championship fair and square. As for Seth, I think Drew wins at Mania and Seth tries to win his championship back. Question, if you had your way, how would you book the key players, Cody, Roman, Rock, post-WrestleMania? Yeah, I think, you know, if we stipulate to Cody winning at WrestleMania, certainly that's going to be a soul-searching time for Roman Reigns. I wouldn't be surprised to see him take some time. I know, shocker, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him take some time off from television in the immediate aftermath of his loss. You know, maybe have Jimmy or Solo try to run the Bloodline while he is gone. And then have Roman get paranoid about them trying to take his spot because he's no longer champion. And then, you know, it really all depends on Rock's availability after WrestleMania. If he's going to be around and making appearances, then you could go a little harder at the Roman-Rock storyline from there. If he's going to be gone until whenever they decide to have the match, then, you know, you could have Roman make allusions to The Rock, but maybe not go so hard after him. Cody's a little tougher because he's in more of a traditional role here as champion where it's kind of like next man up. Who's up after Roman? It's been so long since there's been a legitimate heel challenger to the championship that, you know, I think there are some guys who are waiting in line. So I'm really interested to see. Certainly, I know that WWE doesn't do automatic rematch clauses anymore, but if anyone had a claim to a rematch based on their body of work as champion, Roman Reigns would have that. So I do wonder if they go to that right away or if they maybe, you know, the rubber match of Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns could be something they want to do down the line, maybe later on in 2024. So how do you see that playing out for Roman and Cody in the aftermath of WrestleMania?
So, yeah, I'm under the illusion. If it doesn't happen this year, then I'm not going to say something dumb like I'm going to quit watching because I'm not one of those people. But, I'm under the illusion Cody's winning that title this year. After WrestleMania, in the immediate future, I'll start with Cody. I mean, you're going to – assuming we're not getting any shakeups because you've already mentioned it. Yeah, that's something that happened last year right after, too. You could start with, you know, the first couple of challengers. I mean, let's just be honest. It's not going to be anyone that dethrones him, unless there's some sort of injury and they need to get the title off him. I mean, you could do a little bit of fan service. Maybe the first guy, put him up against AJ Styles. That would be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I think him and AJ would have a really good feud. You could even decide to turn Randy Orton heel. Orton and Cody. There's obvious history there. That would write itself.
A lot of history.
Right. I mean, those two right off the top of my head. If you're talking about, you know, we're assuming then that Cody stays on SmackDown, no shakeups. So I'm just trying to stay with the current rosters. You could do him and KO. I think KO has done great as a babyface, but he's also a great heel. So if you wanted to turn him heel, there's some history with those two since Cody came back a couple years ago. So you could play off of that. In terms of Roman Reigns, I would say I feel like I laughed when you said it, but I had to mute myself to cough. I think he goes away for a while as well. Rock's going to be gone. I know he's filming a movie in May. So at that point, to me, the bloodline, the WrestleMania match means the bloodline, the group itself, at least. Maybe not, you could still call it the saga, but the group itself, to me, crumbles, especially if both those guys are gone. And you could kind of, the pieces kind of shatter from there, and you kind of see what happens. I still think, you know, no confirmation, but no reason to believe we don't get Rock and Roman either at SummerSlam or next year's WrestleMania, which was written out. I did agree with that. The other big event that I could see them doing, I don't think it would be Rock Roman. I still think Rock Roman would be saved for a huge PLE like a SummerSlam stadium or 41. Presumably they're saying Minneapolis. I'm sure Wade and Jason will love that. You could wait to do it at WrestleMania 41. But if we're looking at Cody and Roman 3, how about their debut on Netflix? That's what I would go with.
That's going to be a loaded show. It's going to be a big show, and that's something to keep in mind for later on in the year and the early next year. That's another thing we got to start, you know, incorporating into this long term when we're talking long term booking, when we're talking the long term plans. That's going to be another big show. It's not a pay per view. I mean, it kind of is, I suppose, but not in the traditional sense. It's one of those things you have to account for now. And you know that they're going to load up on that show and make it feel like a major happening. And so, it's going to be interesting. I think there's a lot of different ways they can go, which is what makes, of course, wrestling so fun and frustrating a lot of times as well. But, we'll have to keep that in mind and see where they decide to go. We got a couple more phone calls. I want to thank these guys for staying on hold for so long. It's the 609 area code. 609, you are on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, I'm Mike from New Jersey.
Hi, Mike. Another Mike from New Jersey. Hi. Thanks for calling in.
Not
what's
a problem.
On your mind tonight?
I know the other Mike that called in earlier.
Okay.
But
that makes sense then.
My thing is with Cody Rhodes, if CM Punk wasn't hurt or got hurt, I should say, I think it would have been him and Roman Reigns in the WrestleMania. But you also have to add the factor of Brock Lesnar isn't there. So he got thrown in the mix of like not being there, but now he's supposedly back on the WrestleMania thing. So it's just like, I think last minute, everything got pushed ahead of schedule. And then like my thing is also, they should have added like Stone Cold Steve Austin to the mix with The Rock being with everything.
I think that Austin would have been a little too much. You know, his match last year stood on its own, stood apart from everything else, as it should have. It was special. It was a big return match. And because it stood on its own and there was nothing else competing for that level of attention, I think it succeeded and it felt like a big deal. I think if you try to do another Austin match this year, and I know there were some discussions or Austin had at least considered it, I think with The Rock returning, you want that to stand on its own. You don't want The Rock's return to be competing for attention with Austin's return and vice versa, to be quite honest with you. Tony, go ahead and jump in there. Is there room, do you think, for an Austin match on this show, or would there have been?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to work backwards a little bit from some of the other names he mentioned. He mentioned Brock Lesnar, who randomly did appear back on WWE.com last week on their roster page. I mean, from all accounts, I can't see him having a match now at this point. I'm surprised. It's one of those things like, let's just see if anybody notices. I feel like that they've still got to let that either die down. And by all indications, everywhere that I've looked, there's no plans. Of course, plans always change. And even if he were originally part of the plans, the original plan, I believe, was him and Gunther. So that only changed, if you want to call Gunther, and I don't mean it in a disparaging way, he's like a secondary story because it's a secondary title, if we're being honest. Brock and Gunther, I think, was the plan. So I don't think that would have affected any of that. Now, when you talk about Steve Austin, there's still a way to do it, and I believe I got to credit Jason Powell with it because I've heard him talk about it, and it was brought up on some of his shows over at ProWrestling.net, where in the weeks coming down to this, and it's kind of been going that with direction. You have Drew McIntyre kind of calling Seth out, saying you're not focused, on me, you're focused on this. Your brain's not in the game. Maybe it does get down to the wire, and Seth, maybe something goes off in his head where he's like, my God, he's right. I could lose my title. I'm involved in something I shouldn't be. And at the last minute, Seth and Cody really, if you follow their kayfabe story the last few years, they weren't close. All of a sudden now, this feels forced. Seth came into, he got kind of caught up in something and got way in too deep. Maybe at the last minute he does back out. Enter Steve Austin for that. It's a last-minute thing. It's a nice surprise. It plays off The Rock and Austin's history. You could do that. Or throw out everything I just said, and you get Bloodline rules for the Night 2 match for the main event, and without robbing the moment from Cody, so it couldn't be too close to the end of the match, Austin comes out to even the score, and him and Rock fight to the back, and you still have your finish 10 minutes later, so that he equalized the match, but he didn't take away from your crowning moment that Cody deserves at the end of the show. So that's, I total credit to Jason Powell on especially that second one. But those thoughts have been thrown out on some of the platforms over at ProWrestling.net, and I could see those being perfectly conceivable because they would be no more forced and convoluted than what we saw at the beginning of how this story's played out due to the injury of Punk and the wavering of Cody back and forth on what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm. Mike, anything else for us tonight?
One last thing. I think with Christian Cage and Adam Copeland, I think it's kind of leaning towards the stale part of things. So my thing is, I think they should have one last match on Wednesday. Then maybe at the pay-per-view, they maybe change it up at the pay-per-view. They team up as one last tag team, and then run that for a while. Then Edge kind of does a Shawn Michaels kick to the face. Then they kind of do that one last match for Edge, his final farewell, as you can call it.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Appreciate you talking to us here tonight and calling in and following in your friend Mike from New Jersey's footsteps. It does kind of feel like whenever Edge/Adam Copeland has his last match that it's going to involve Christian somehow. So I know you talked about Tony wanting this to be the end, this I Quit match, the end of the Copeland-Cage storyline, but it's going to circle back when Copeland retires mm-hmm. another year or two or whatever it is. You kind of get the feeling, either as a tag or one-on-one, depending on where Christian is as a character at that
point. I like the idea. I think it's a little bit rushed because we mentioned that, boy, these guys, especially Christian, has taken some real shots, both physically and emotionally. Edge and taking shots at his family. And, you know, those cuts are going to be a little bit deep. They're a little bit raw right now. But like we said, at some point things will come back around. They will team again. I can't see it happening as early as next month. Now, having said that, I'm going to combine this with what I was talking about earlier, where I've been impressed with the work the Young Bucks have done. And one of the early statements, excuse me, one of the early mission statements when they did make this heel turn is, you know, this is supposed to be all elite wrestling. It's not about the older guys. When Christian eventually has his, you know, like his come to Jesus moment, and he's got to break down and he has to be contrite and get forgiveness from Adam Copeland. And again, like we said, it will happen. Can't be too soon, but it will happen. They team back up. They get their big final run. Who better to maybe end that feud with than the Young Bucks as well, who said, you know, they were trying to run all the old guys out of AEW that don't belong there anyway. To me, back when they cut that promo a month ago or whatever it was, that was actually something that popped in my mind then. I'm like, man, you can't do it right now with Christian because he's a heel as well. But if you get Christian eventually on page with Adam Copeland, maybe it's not till maybe the end of this year, early next year, and they get a little bit of a run in them. And if the Bucks are still doing this heel EVP thing, and hopefully with variations and they evolve as it goes, that could be a way you go with them down the road. And that's how they end their careers, is going out on top, working with the Young Bucks. Cause you know, if the Young Bucks were good enough for Sting. Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
I could totally see a scenario where they end their careers in a tag match together at the same time.
Absolutely. And it, you know, if the Young Bucks were good enough for Christian, or I'm sorry, for Sting, they're absolutely good enough for Edge and Adam Copeland to be a final match. If that's where you do, those two go out on top with, you know, two of the best tag teams of the last 25 years. Boy, I'd be in for that. I think it would be a lot of fun.
For sure. All right, our final phone call of the evening goes to the 409 area code. 409, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, what's up, Tony? What's up, Greg? I am Freddie P, living in Hollywood right now.
Hey, how's it going? What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, going well. First question, big Mercedes Moné, and as you guys also said earlier, it takes a lot to get used to that. I'm a big Mercedes Moné fan here. If you'd like to go back to WWE, what kind of lessons, pros and cons, do you think she could learn from Cody's tenure in AEW, things that did right, things that did wrong, that she could apply to her own run there? My first question.
Yeah, that's a good question. Cody came in, a lot of fanfare, big star. Fans eventually turned on him. He really had to get out of there and has been wildly successful in WWE. So I just think it's kind of a know-your-audience type thing. I think Cody got away from what the AEW audience wanted. And by the end of his run, Tony, if you remember, a lot of people were saying, boy, you know, Cody would be a much better fit with what he's doing right now, with the character that he has. He'd be a much better fit in WWE than he would in AEW, which is really wild to think about when AEW first started and Cody was first one of the main characters on screen. And he seemed so anti everything WWE was about. So, I mean, that's kind of one thing, is just know your audience and know that AEW is not WWE, and you do want to try to be different. Anything else, Tony, that you think that Mercedes can take any lessons from Cody's ups and downs in AEW?
Yeah, it's weird. You think about that Cody run real quick too. I mentioned earlier, he worked himself into being a heel, but what he did works great in WWE as a face. And it's just, like you said, knowing your audience. And we're going to get to see how well Sasha Banks can really – trying to think the best way I want to say this. She is not going to be spoon-fed her promos in AEW like she was in WWE. She's going to be given a lot more freedom. So we're going to get to see, you know, because that was – if you're going to point out a weakness of Sasha Banks, I would say it's her promos, because that's not – a terrible thing, but her in-ring work is it very much overshadows her promo work, even though she's very charismatic. I want to see what she's going to do in AEW going forward, because the first night, I hate to say it's easy because the fans are excited. You can't really say much wrong. Going forward, I want to see how she develops a character on screen where she's not, you know, she doesn't have script writers in the back and she's not going to be told she has to hit these bullet points. She's going to be able to kind of do her own thing. And I just want to see if she could adjust to basically what you said, knowing her audience and where to do those sort of things. Because if you look at what Cody does, he has a little bit of like a governor or a buffer in WWE. And that's why his promos, I think, work so much better in WWE, is he doesn't go off script as much and he's kind of focused. And I want to see if Sasha is able to pull that off, because it's going to be a big change for her with a different type of audience. So I'm kind of in the same line with Greg with that.
Anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, my second question was, what do you guys predict are the biggest shockers coming out of WrestleMania? If you had to pick one for the Raw brand and one for the SmackDown brand.
Oh boy. Yeah, there always does seem to be a surprise at WrestleMania or two, Tony. Hard to think right now what it would be. I think, you know, have to imagine. Yeah, go ahead, please.
I was going to say, if I could jump in, I maybe give you some time to think, because one popped into my head for one side, not necessarily the other. Maybe something will come to me, but maybe we go back and forth. I could see the shock from the Raw side, and I'm not sure that I want to see it, but if it were to happen, I could see Sami Zayn winning the Intercontinental title. I don't want to see Gunther lose. Wade and I have talked about this on a Raw post show before, and he got me around to the point that I think Gunther should hold that title until he challenges and defeats a world champion. And then at that point, he could relinquish the Intercontinental title. But they're telling this story with Sammy and, you know, about his path to WrestleMania. And I could see him winning it. I don't necessarily think I want it to happen, because they're also telling the secondary story that he hasn't beat Drew McIntyre. And that also makes him a prime candidate for McIntyre post-WrestleMania as well, if maybe he can win the world title off him in SummerSlam. So that could be the one I could see on Raw. SmackDown, I'm having a little bit harder of a time. I'm not sure if you've come up with anything in the last 90 seconds since I started talking, but I'll throw it back to you.
Let me throw a couple things out there related to the Bloodline. I'll say something to the effect of another member of the family debuts, whether it's in Roman's match, whether it's in the Usos match, because they'll be facing each other. You know, I want to throw out Jacob Fatu. There's a couple other guys who are in the wrestling business now who could be involved. So I think that would be a shocker. And I'll go for Raw. We talked about in AEW how Swerve is a babyface in a group of heels, how, Will Ospreay is a babyface in a group of heels. I would throw Rhea Ripley into there. I think she is a baby face in a group of heels. And I do wonder how long or how much longer that association with the Judgment Day is going to last. I think it could come to a head at WrestleMania. Would not surprise me. So I would throw that out there as a surprise as well. So, Tony, I don't know if you have another one you want to throw in there.
No, what's funny is you brought up Jacob Fatu. I think that's a great one. I think the other name you're probably thinking of is Tama Tonga, because if we're to believe some of the reports, he has a contract with WWE, and if they were going to do either or especially both those guys, that actually would kind of negate the point I said earlier that, you know, Rock and Roman being gone after WrestleMania could kill that faction. And now if you're introducing two new guys, it doesn't have the same star power, but it at least has the quantity. It might not have the quality, but you could build that up over time. And maybe the faction does live on with obviously a much different look, almost kind of like the night after WrestleMania 14, where you have Shawn Michaels exit And Triple H brings in two new guys being, or actually three, with X-Pac and the New Age Outlaws with his new DX. It could just be like a new bloodline. So I like where your head is with that. And, and we always – it seems – we all seem to forget because it's been, 9 months? Damian Priest is still walking around with the Money in the Bank case, and he's got to cash it in before Money in the Bank this year. So I don't know. You got that hanging over your head as well.
Yeah, that's true. Hadn't thought about that, but that's always something in play at WrestleMania. All right, Sid, do you have a final question or comment for us tonight?
Yes, I do, and love the show, Greg. You really do good work. Might be going to
thank
WrestleMania,
you.
So I'll probably send you. No, thank you. I'll send you an email. Also, too, just wanted to say really quick for my final questions, as an aside, I really want to know, like, whose decision was it for Cody to lose last year? Was that Vince coming in the office and pulling a swerve when Triple H originally had it for Cody to win? It's just been a burning question of mine, and no one's really answered that a year out. So that's kind of just an aside. But my last question is based on The Rock and the Bloodline. I love The Rock, love the 90s, love everything he's doing. It's entertaining as hell. But as I was watching that concert on Friday, I was thinking to myself, if I weren't a regular fan of wrestling and I just tuned in, you know, just to see this, I would think that it's Rock versus Cody. So it almost seems as though that, you know, The Rock's promos are almost out of anger towards Cody taking his spot versus his promos being sort of done in a way to, of course, you have the anger towards, you know, Seth and Cody, but also too, you know, you're building up other members of the Bloodline as you guys, and as the other questioners talked about earlier as well. So you can do both. So my last question is, how can the WWE strategically use Rock's appearance to elevate the other members of the Bloodline, like, like Solo, besides saying he's going to sing the national anthem? How can they use his last appearances to elevate the other members of Bloodline? Thanks. I'll listen.
All right. Thank you so much for the call and the kind words. Really appreciate it. And we'll segue this, Tony, to talk about – this is actually perfect timing to talk about The Rock's concert on Friday. And, you know, certainly there's anger in Cody from taking away his match with Roman Reigns. There's anger that you want to build up so people want to see Cody and Seth versus Roman and The Rock. But, you know, one of the things that I brought up earlier was the idea that when they're in the ring together, Rock has so much more star power than Roman Reigns. And what kind of damage, if any, that does to how Reigns is viewed by WWE's audience. And then, as you mentioned, you know, what can WWE have The Rock do to, you know, he can go out and be The Rock and he can be charming and he can be, you know, going after the fans and, you know, calling them names and whatever like that, but also at the same time building up the Bloodline, because when The Rock is gone, the Bloodline, Jimmy Uso, Solo Sikoa, to a lesser extent Roman Reigns, they're going to be there when he's back in Hollywood. So how do you give them the rub, aside from just standing next to him and being in the same group as him, beyond that? What would you do with The Rock to do that? And this is where you can also throw in your comments about Friday as well.
Yeah, when you talk about elevating guys like Jimmy and Solo, man, it's – I want to say it's a tough time of year to do that, because right now your sole focus is doing the best programming of the year as you head to WrestleMania. You know, if this was The Rock joining for some appearances back in, like, November, December, or even, like, July, heading to a SummerSlam maybe – I feel like there's more you could do. You can get him more involved with those guys and give them the rub. But considering the two huge matches they have that they're pushing for night one and night two, you feel like as much time as he's spending on television, he's getting like 30, 40 minutes at the beginning of all these SmackDowns. you know, that time, unfortunately, right now, it has to be focused on building not one, but like I said, two matches at WrestleMania. So it's just the wrong time and place right now that he almost can't spend time putting help getting those guys over. It's a tough situation to be in, and it's just the wrong place and wrong time of the year. That's just where I look at it when I look at it that way. Now, when I look at Friday night, I'm watching that show, and it was that segment went approximately 30 minutes, I'd say. It was a tale of two, even though it was one segment, it was like two sides of the same coin. It was a tale of like two segments, even though it was one. The first half of that segment felt so counterproductive. He came out, and it's funny, our last caller said, you know, if you put that segment in a vacuum, yes, very entertaining. Especially if you're an Attitude Era fan, you probably love that segment. If you haven't watched WWE in 25 years, you probably thought, man, this is great. And sure, there were elements of it that were great. It was entertaining. It was funny. The Rock came off as charming. Yeah, and that's everything he's not supposed to be right now. The last month, he has ragged on every crowd he's been in front of. He has played a straight-up heel for the most part. And this past Friday in Memphis, it was like you just thought he was back in Miami. I know he said he was home, and I understand why he said that, because that's where he got his first training. But I never associate Memphis and The Rock as Rock being home. It was just weird. Was it funny and entertaining, and were there some good wisecracks? Absolutely. But he got the crowd cheering for him, which is totally not what he's going for in this whole Bloodline story right now. It makes no sense. Then on the back half, he got more serious. He got back to business and kind of directed his anger, his comments in the right, the right appropriate areas it should have been. But at that point, that crowd, he had entertained them, and they'd had so much fun with him already that I know they booed him in some spots when he went after Cody. But because of the first half being so counterproductive, I felt like the night was almost a throwaway. And as entertaining as it was, it was counterproductive and didn't accomplish much. Not sure if you feel the same way, but that's where I left coming out of that first half hour of SmackDown Friday.
I had written down in my notes to talk about this, and when I did, one of the questions, the first question I had written down was thoughts on the segment in a vacuum. So, the phraseology is exactly the way I thought of it, too, as, okay, if you were to plop this segment down in the middle of a show any other time of year, probably would be great. Probably would get over great. Entertaining, yes. Tension, yes. Probably kept the viewers' attention. I haven't looked at the ratings on it, but probably yes. And it's just Rock in his element. This is what he likes. This is where he succeeds. This is what he likes to do. And you can tell, as if you were watching it, that he's getting a kick out of it. But things don't happen in a vacuum. And right now, we're on the road to WrestleMania 3 weeks or so out, and the importance is the build. And as you mentioned, some things that were counterproductive – got some deep cuts on Cody Rhodes that Cody can talk about on Raw tomorrow night and address. There's still that weirdness, though, about Roman Reigns teaming with The Rock at the same time that Rock is mad that he lost out on his match against Roman Reigns. And I think that's a very fine, it's a very fine line, because you can say, hey, it would be Roman versus The Rock, not to any degree of animosity between the two, but to find out who is truly the leader of this family. Like, this is how families deal with things. This is how families find out who the leader is. They go to battle, and when there's a victor, there's a victor. There's someone who loses, and then they go back to being family. And so it's not an intense rivalry of hatred. It's family versus family, and we want to see who's the best. I don't think that's resonated the way that maybe they had intended or maybe that is just sort of a byproduct of them pivoting so quickly back to Cody, is that that's something that's kind of lost in the shuffle. But I do think that's out there, that that's something that really hasn't been addressed, and it's made the buildup feel a little weird.
Yeah, I feel like, to your point on that, it feels like Roman has worked harder to show the family divide than The Rock, at least since that Vegas, whatever you want to call it, press conference that wasn't a press conference. Like, you saw Roman a couple of weeks ago come out, and he was going to leave town because he was playing to the crowd, that the crowd was pissing him off. I was into that. He was going to leave, and Paul goes, no, we still have business. You know, Roman looked annoyed. And then the following week, despite the fact that The Rock's talking him up and putting him over, he wants to be acknowledged by The Rock. Like, I feel like Roman is trying – it's almost like it's a one-man show when it's just trying to carry that side of it.
There's an insecurity with his character.
Yeah.
Right? Now that The Rock is here, he's a little insecure that all of a sudden, you know, he's been talking nonstop about being the head of the table, and here comes – the guy who is the undisputed biggest star of WWE, who is arguably the biggest movie star in the world. And we're seeing some insecurity with the Roman Reigns. But again, I'm not sure that's a story that they're really telling well enough to get across to the average viewer.
No, I think you're right. And that's why I'm saying, maybe if we look at it that way, is that you're looking at jealousy from one side of it, and the other side of it is that The Rock doesn't care about it. He's oblivious to it. And I come back to something I said earlier in the show. This was such a pivot because it felt like they knew where they were going. Punk gets hurt. Then they pivoted. And then it's almost like they pivoted again. So if you're watching this from the beginning, like what we all have been, it's confusing because you're like, yeah, there's something missing. And maybe that's something that after WrestleMania, as you head into SummerSlam, and if that's the time they're going to do it, maybe they start to entrench themselves into that feud a little bit more. But because of the, like I said, I feel like it's multiple pivots since the injury and then the decision was made, or if you're to believe that they went back and forth, that's where everything got lost, because Roman's still trying to carry that side of it. And maybe this is going to be this new part of the story, of the long-term storytelling, where you could point back to is that The Rock tried to be gracious, but Roman was jealous and couldn't let go of that, even though Rock acknowledged him. So it's one of those things. I see what you're saying, but I can look at it from they're doing it from one side, not the other. And it might be one of those things that's what we're going to see play out through the rest of this year into early 2025.
And, you know, there is still several episodes of Raw and SmackDown where they can address some of these inconsistencies or clarify some of these motivations for these characters. I wouldn't rule that out either. 2 hours, good conversation. We didn't even get to our secondary stuff to talk about because it was all phone calls and emails, which is great. Love that. Thank you. I know you probably touch and go with you this week about whether you could be on, so I appreciate you spending 2 hours here. Hope you get to feeling better, but go ahead and plug your social media and what you do for The Torch and .net as well.
Yeah. No, when you asked me, I knew I would make it work. In and out of sound, I could feel it in my voice, but I never miss an opportunity unless I can't get out of the day job, which is actually sometimes at night, but you get the idea. So I always love coming on here, and if I can help it, I'm here. Social media, X, formerly Twitter, and Threads, both of them have the same handle, at Tony Donofrio. It's at TonyDonofrio. I am on both of those. Not using Threads as much as I'd like. I'm just waiting for people to still kind of pull themselves over there. I still mostly post on the former Twitter, or now X, whatever you want to call it. Do pay-per-view reviews for The Torch when I'm not in Orlando or getting pneumonia. And then for .net, I'm overdue on some columns because I've had a heck of a winter. I've gotten sick 3 times this winter. The previous 5 years, I've been sick twice. So I was due for all these sicknesses, I guess. But also do some columns for wrestling.net.
I'm the same way, man. I've had a cold 3 times probably in the last 3-4 months, which is very rare for me. So I can definitely feel what you're saying.
Yeah, this winter it's just everything caught up with me. Like I said, twice in 5 years until this winter, then 3 times in 4 months, including pneumonia and bronchitis. Yeah. So whatever, it's just. But I do Tony's Takes columns over at ProWrestling.net, which is basically like the cousin of Pro Wrestling Torch. So I love to be able to, you know, help out both sites as much as I can, whether it be audio form, writing form, and, you know, been doing these with Greg for a long time, all the way going back to the old now defunct Moonlighting show, and it's always fun. So give me a follow on those socials if you wish. If not, no big deal. I'm sure I'll be back on again, and always fun to be with you, Greg. It's always a good time.
All right. Thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate it. And we will be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern. WrestleMania is getting closer, so we'll dedicate more time to talking about the card as it takes shape over the next few weeks. The week before WrestleMania will be our big WrestleMania preview show, so you won't want to miss that. And then after WrestleMania Night 1 and Night 2, we'll be going on the air after both nights of WrestleMania, breaking down each show here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. I am Greg Parks. You can find me on social media at Greg M. Parks. Until next week, if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.